You will forgive me, said the stranger across the soup in a voice like a door closing. But no woman of sense actually reads Hartley's essays. She merely carries one to look improved. Barnaby had said it precisely to wound, because he was bored and the candlelight was good, and the young woman to his left had spent the whole of the introductions ignoring him. He had not expected her to set down her spoon, turn the full force of a pair of bright, level eyes upon him, and reply without the smallest hurry. How fortunate then, said Verity Sloane, that I am a woman of no sense whatever, for I have read all four volumes, and found the second so thin I gave it to the kitchen to light fires with. You have read them, I take it, sir, to speak so freely of who carries them. A small, dangerous warmth woke in the Duke of Carrowmore's chest. He had come down to this country dinner party out of obligation to an old friend, expecting a long evening of insipid daughters and gout-ridden squires, and had resigned himself to silence. He had not bargained for this, a gentleman's daughter in unfashionable green, no jewels worth naming, who had just told him to his face that she had burned an author he had been about to claim he admired. I have read the first, he admitted. I confess I did not reach the kitchen fire volume. Then we are neither of us improved, she said, and returned serene to her soup. He could not let it lie. That was the trouble with him, his sister always said. Barnaby could no more leave a worthy opponent unanswered than a starving man could leave bread. All down the length of the candlelit table, while silver clinked and dull men discussed the price of barley, he and the young woman in green fought a quiet, ferocious little war. He praised the hunting in the shire. She observed that men generally praised the killing of foxes in proportion to how little else they had accomplished that season. He remarked that she had strong opinions for a lady. She replied that she had simply never been taught the trick of having weak ones, and asked whether he found it tiring. He said her wit would frighten suitors. She said she devoutly hoped so, as it spared her the dull ones, and refilled her own wine glass before the footman could reach it, lifting it to him with a glint that was almost a dare. Barnaby drank to her without quite meaning to. Across the table, in the wavering gold of a dozen candles, he found himself watching the way her chin came up before each retort. The way she let a silence sit just long enough to make him lean in, and he, who had endured three seasons of women angling for his title with cast-down lashes, felt something in him stand up and pay attention for the first time in years. You argue, he said at last, low, like a person who expects to be answered. I argue, she returned, like a person who is so rarely answered that I have learned to enjoy the rare occasion. She tilted her head. You are not what I took you for, sir, when you opened by insulting my reading. You have improved across the fish course. I had not thought you capable of it. High praise, he said dryly. The highest I give before the cheese, she agreed. He laughed a short surprised sound that turned several heads, because the Duke of Carrowmore was not known for laughing at country tables, and the sound of it sat strangely even in his own ears. She looked pleased and tried to hide it, and failed, and that small failure undid him more than any of her victories had. He did not know her name. The introductions had been a blur of dull faces and he had not troubled to attend. She had been seated as Sloane's eldest, and he had not asked further, too occupied with being bored. He resolved, between the partridge and the pudding, to learn it. He resolved a great many things between the partridge and the pudding, most of which would have alarmed him had he examined them in daylight. Tell me, he said, when the ladies had not yet withdrawn and the talk had loosened, what would you do if you were not obliged to sit at dinners and be improving? The question was clumsy and he knew it, but she did not deflect it. For the first time the sparring eased, and something quieter came into her face. I would manage land, she said simply. My father's were I able. I have kept his books these 4 years since my mother died and his eyes failed, and I am better at it than his steward who knows it, which is why he dislikes me. She looked down at her glass. But I am the eldest of four daughters with no fortune, sir, and what I would do and what I shall do are seldom on speaking terms. So I read essays and burn the thin ones and argue with strangers at dinner because it is the one freedom no one can dock from my allowance. The whole party seemed to recede. Barnaby looked at her, at the bright, tired, undefeated face of a girl who ran an estate she would never inherit and made jokes about it rather than weep, and the careless boredom he had carried into this house fell away from him entirely and did not come back. You should weep by rights, he said quietly, most would. Weeping, said Verity Sloane, has never once balanced a ledger. She lifted her chin, the old defiance back, but her voice had gone soft at the edges. Why do you ask me these things, sir? You have not even troubled to learn my name. It was at that precise moment that her father, glowing with the particular pride of a host who has saved his best surprise for last, rose at the head of the table and tapped his glass. "My friends, I have been remiss. I have let my eldest monopolize our most honored guest the whole evening and never properly made them known to one another." He beamed down the table. "Verity, my dear, you have been sparring this last hour, I don't doubt, for you cannot help it, but allow me to present in form the Duke of Carrowmore." The silence that followed was a thing Barnaby would remember all his life. Verity Sloane went very still. The wine glass stopped halfway to the table. The color, which had been so quick to flame in her cheeks all evening, drained clean away and then came rushing back twice as hard, and she looked at the man she had told to his face that he praised killing foxes in proportion to his other failures, the man she had said improved across the fish course, the man whose author she had given to the kitchen fire, and she closed her eyes briefly, as one does at the top of a long fall. "A duke," she said faintly. "A duke," Barnaby agreed, and he could not keep the delight out of it. "I told you that you argued like a person who expected to be answered," she said, opening her eyes, "and you let me the entire evening sit here and—" She stopped. Her father, baffled, had sat down again. The table had returned to its murmur. It was, for a moment, only the two of them in the candlelight once more. "You might have said." "And lost the only honest conversation I have had in 3 seasons," he said. "Madam, I would sooner have lost the partridge." She stared at him. And then, because she was Verity Sloane, and because she had not the trick of weak feelings, she began, helplessly, to laugh, one hand pressed to her mouth, her shoulders shaking, and he watched her laugh and thought he had never in his life seen anything he wanted so much to keep. He called the next morning. He called the morning after that. The Shire, which had not known what to make of the Duke's long indifference, did not know what to make of his sudden constancy either, but the Duke of Carrowmore had stopped caring some while ago what the Shire made of anything. He did not court her with poetry, she would have burned it like the thin volume. He courted her with arguments, he brought her his own land disputes and listened, genuinely listened, while she found the flaw in his steward's accounting that 3 men of business had missed. He set problems before her for the pleasure of being bested. He disagreed with her on principle twice a week, because the disagreeing had become the dearest hour of his fortnight. He learned that beneath the wit was a tiredness no one had ever offered to lift, and he set himself, quietly and without announcement, to lifting it. "You are doing it again," she told him one afternoon, in her father's worn study, the ledgers open between them, "bringing me sums I could do in my sleep so that I will think you need me." "I do need you," he said. "That is rather the difficulty I have been trying to confess for a month, and you keep correcting my arithmetic before I can manage it." The pen stilled in her hand. "I had 3 seasons of women who agreed with everything I said," he went on low, "and I was so bored, Verity, I had begun to think the fault was in me, that I was a man simply incapable of being moved. And then a girl in unfashionable green told me I praised foxes in proportion to my failures, and I have not had a dull thought since." He reached across the ledger and stilled her hand beneath his, ink-stained and clever and his. "Marry me. Not to rescue you, though I mean to lighten every load you carry until you forget what it weighed. Marry me because I cannot imagine arguing my way through the rest of my life with anyone else, and I find I do not wish to try." She looked at their joined hands, and at the books she had kept for 4 uncomplaining years, and at the brilliant, arrogant, transformed man who had walked into her father's house to be bored and stayed to be undone. "You realize," she said, and her voice was not quite steady, "that I shall go on correcting your arithmetic." "I am counting on it," he said. "I should be lost within a fortnight otherwise. And I shall give your favorite authors to the kitchen fire if they are thin." "I have already reconsidered my opinion of Hartley entirely," he said gravely, "on excellent authority." Then Verity Sloane, who had never learned the trick of weak feelings, turned her hand over beneath his so their fingers laced, and said yes the way she did everything, plainly, fiercely, and as though she had decided it some while ago and was only now permitting him to know. They married before the laves turned. She managed his lands and his arguments with equal mastery, and the Duke of Carrowmore, who had been brilliant and aloof and quietly starving for years, found himself, at the end of every long day, hurrying home to be contradicted by the only person who had ever truly answered him. "Do you know," he told her once, years on, by their own fire, "I came down to that dinner certain there was nothing left in the world that could surprise me." "And then," said his wife, not looking up from the ledger in her lap, "you insulted my reading." And then, the Duke agreed, taking her ink-stained hand and pressing it to his lips. I insulted your reading, and you set me right, and you have been setting me right ever since, and it is the great good fortune of my life, my love, that you never once let me win.